Here on FM, our Book of the Week, Commandant, by Rory Carroll, the story of Hugo Chavez. During the 14 years of his presidency, Chavez sustained his popularity with a relentless TV presence. The reader is Jack Claff.
A quiet Sunday morning in February 2010, the 11th year of the revolution, and the Commandante took a stroll outside the palace's peach-coloured walls. The sun was shining, the mood light. Aides and ministers in red T-shirts swarmed a few feet behind. When the entourage entered the Plaza Bolivar, a church bell pealed and pigeons fluttered. The Commandante slowly circled the plaza, then walked to the centre of the plaza toward a giant equestrian statue on a marble pedestal. The bronze-black stallion reared on its hind legs, veins and muscles bulging in its shiny flanks. The rider, astride this thrusting energy, wore breeches, boots, and a magnificent tunic with epaulettes and braid. For over a century he had gazed down at the plaza, holding out his hat, as if in salutation to a cheering crowd and glory eternal. Simón Bolívar, liberator of Venezuela, New Granada, Ecuador, and Peru, founder of Bolivia. The Commandante paused at the statue and adopted a pedagogical tone, a cue for the entourage to cluster and form an audience. The oligarchy brought his remains here after expelling him in life. Then they started to use Bolivar, his myth, make him almost a saint, but for their own interests, to exploit the people using Bolivar himself. They made him into something he wasn't, the way some Catholics have made Jesus into something he wasn't. Christ was a great rebel, and for that he died crucified. He was an anti-imperialist. He was born and died among the poor, and for the poor, and with the poor. And that's what happened with Bolivar. The bourgeoisie transformed him. Rooted to the spot, a statue himself, the Commandante lowered his voice to paint another graphic scene. At this very spot, he said, patriots from a 1797 rebellion were brought to execution scaffolds, some to be hanged, others beheaded. Among the spectators that day was a group of teenage boys, flinching as nooses and axes did their work. The youngest of them was Bolivar, and he vowed vengeance against the Spanish Empire. Right here. The Commandante's audience seemed to shiver, for they were on hallowed ground. You realize, he continued, where we come from, what flesh and clay we're made of, you see? That is why we're here today, saying more than ever, fatherland, socialism, or death. We will prevail. The entourage roared back, we will prevail. The Commandante beckoned the municipal mayor, Jorge Rodriguez. A psychiatrist by profession, Rodriguez had been the Commandante's favourite egghead in the early years, but he was blamed for his one electoral defeat, a referendum in 2007, and was cast out of the palace's golden circle. Demoted to mayor and desperate to win back favour, Rodriguez ruled over a shrivelled fiefdom that included Plaza Bolivar, and now the boss summoned him to his side, a glint in his eye.
The plaza has improved. Changed, but it's still missing something, no? Missing a special touch. That building over there, an old theatre, right? But now in government hands?
Yes, it's in government hands, said Rodriguez. Chavez pointed to a handsome 10-story block, partly obscured by red banners suspended from lampposts.
And that building?
An expectant pause, a little intake of breath, because everyone knew, the Commandante knew, that this was La Francia, a famous landmark filled with the country's best jewellery stores. High-ranking government officials shopped there. Tourists did too, until cruise ships stopped coming. Rodriguez himself recently bought an expensive emerald ring. He replied, "That is a building of private jewellery stores." The Commandante, arm outstretched, finger pointing, unleashed his bolt.
Expropriate it.
Rodriguez simultaneously stiffened and bowed. Okay. The entourage gazed at the building as if expecting flames to shoot out. Some began to clap. The Commandante wheeled and pointed at the other side of the square.
And that building over there, on the corner?
That is also filled with stores, said Rodriguez. The Commandante looked affronted.
Bolivar lived there when he was newly married, and now it has stores?
Expropriate it. The Commandante pointed at another building.
This building here, what is it?
Rodriguez. That's also a centre of private stores.
Commandante. Expropriate it, Mr. Mayor. Expropriate it.
This was episode 351 of Hello President, a weekly live show. The host and star, indignant at commercial desecration of the Liberator's memorial, had taken swift, resolute action. Over the course of the show's next 5 hours, we would see the mayor prepare the expropriation paperwork and submit it to the president for inspection. Weeks before the broadcast, government officials had sniffed around La Francia's 95 little jewellery stores, asking questions, taking photographs. The owners, some of whom had been there since the 1950s, huddled in conference. Pessimists feared revenge for the store owners having once joined a nationwide anti-government strike. Optimists noted the mayor and other high-rolling Chavistas were regular visitors to their gleaming display cases and that the stores employed 2,000 people. Surely that would count for something. The day before the Commandante's show, a rumour gathered force: expropriation. With trepidation, owners and employees switched on Hello President the following morning. Seated at home, they watched the opening credits, a cascade of trumpets, drums and whizzing graphics. Then they saw the Commandante leading his entourage into Plaza Bolivar. Later that night, under cover of darkness, after the show had packed up and the plaza was deserted, the shop owners crept into their stores, the National Guard had yet to move in, and poured all their gold, silver, pearls, rubies and diamonds into cardboard boxes. By dawn they had loaded up and driven away. Every government leader uses the media to justify and persuade, project and burnish, but none like Chavez. He was on television almost every day, for hours at a time, invariably live, with no script or teleprompter, mulling, musing, deciding, ordering. His word was de facto law, and he specialized in unpredictable announcements, nationalizations, referenda, troop mobilizations, cabinet shuffles. You watched, not just for news value. The man was a consummate performer. He would sing, dance, rap, ride a horse, a tank, a bicycle, aim a rifle, cradle a child, scowl, blow kisses, act the fool, the statesman, the patriarch. Hello President had a fixed starting time, but there was no knowing when it would end. On days off, you could take the metro across town, meet a friend for coffee, come home, and find him still talking. Having dispatched the mayor to draft expropriation documents, Chavez sat at a large desk in the center of the Plaza Bolivar, facing rows of cameras and seated officials. As usual, he talked torrents, one idea following another in a twisting, looping narrative, a theological discourse on the revolution's Holy Trinity of Christ, Bolivar, and Karl Marx, a folk song, denunciation of U.S. perfidy, a joke about a Spanish barber, a greeting to his mentor Fidel Castro. By now it was 2 p.m., and he had been talking without pause for 3 hours, a seamless narrative flow. Then, polished as a network anchor, the Commandante switched gears. "Let's go to the satellite." The monitor cut to a gathering of about 200 people in red baseball caps amid ploughed fields just outside Caracas. The camera panned over a tractor, tools, seeds, baskets of vegetables, and newly built houses. A spokesman explained that these 3,400 acres had been neglected. Now, 32 communal councils comprising 5,900 families were making them fertile. Chavez said, "Long live the commune. This is creation." All this was standard fare for Hello President. Last week, happy factory workers. This week, happy peasants. But Chavez almost always found a way to cut through the staging and show something real, which in this case turned out to be an elderly woman lurking behind the spokesman. A weathered grandmother, decades of poverty and manual labour etched on her face, who was clearly nervous with the attention.
"Good afternoon, my Commandante."
The voice quavered, and she looked anxiously at the microphone. Back in Plaza Bolivar, his face beamed on a monitor, Chavez smiled and nodded encouragingly. She continued,
"My name is Laura Thais Rojas, and I belong to the Brisas del Paraíso commune. Excuse me, I'm suffering stage fright."
The voice quavered again. From her accent and age, she had probably left school very young and barely literate. Chavez nodded, signalling, willing her to go on. She gathered confidence.
"But I'm going to speak with you."
And she did, leading the camera to a little house and vegetable patch.
"This is where I've grown lettuce, tomato, radish, what else? Cucumber, carrot, beetroot. The harvest has been good.
Chavez grinned. Let's give applause to Laura. Everybody clapped. Laura, you spoke very well. Do you know that? She smiled shyly. So, Laura, you have that garden. How many meters is it? Tell me.
Well, my commandante, it's 4 flower beds, each 6 meters long, 1 meter wide. I also cultivate earthworms and spread them around the soil. I don't have many, but they do the trick.
I bet the worms do the trick, Laura. What a thing. Natural fertilizer, nothing chemical or polluting. How many people work in that garden with you?
Laura, the voice now firm. My son, my grandson, my daughter, my husband, we work together. Before we were living on waste ground. Here I feel happy because I have a vegetable garden and I'm proud of it.
Proud of your garden, and we're proud of you, Laura. Tell me something. What type of support have you received? Tell me a little about that.
Well, Commandante, apart from the land, we received a spade, a weeding hoe, a water tank, a hose, seeds. Technical advisors have been with us constantly. The Cuban teachers Sonia and Arbejo.
Chavez grinned and clapped his hands. Look how you explained everything so well. And you, who said you had stage fright.
The audience applauded long and loud, and the camera zoomed in on the old woman's face. Laura seemed fit to explode with happiness. This was the moment. There was nothing staged about the shine in her eyes, the joy creasing her cheeks. A long, humble life of scratching subsistence from baked earth. A president asked her name, about her family, about her garden. A camera recorded her words, and a satellite in space delivered them to the nation. Most Venezuelans lived in towns and cities but had nostalgia for rural relatives. Laura could have been anyone's grandmother, and her surge of pride and dignity melted hearts. The broadcast continued, an eclectic monologue about Native Americans being naturally socialist, a lament about Chavez's baseball team Magallanes losing to Caracas, a warning about profiteering capitalists, a recommendation to read Lenin. Soon after church bells tolled 3 p.m., the mayor, face shining with relief, returned to the commandante's side. "Mr. President, I have just signed the request for a declaration of public utility for the 4 buildings on the 4 corners of Plaza Bolivar. Tomorrow they will be officially declared public utilities, President." Chavez examined the document. "Correct." A final satellite link up to Haiti, where Venezuelan and Cuban doctors ran a camp for earthquake survivors. 2 final announcements. A canal to link the Orinoco to the Caribbean, an ancient dream, would become reality thanks to a deal with Argentina. And China and Russia had just pledged billions to modernize the creaking electric grid. Every home would have power. Music wrapped up the show. Hip-hop artists performed a rap about resistance. The commandante jived, waving a red handkerchief. Bravo, bravo, bravo. Then a folk group with a harp rhapsodized about Venezuela's plains. The commandante sang the last verse. The closing image, as credits rolled, was joyful. Morning heat had turned to evening cool, shadows stretching, everybody singing, dancing, laughing. A few blocks away, the Ministry of Communication and Information's young, diligent officials stayed till midnight, typing up the show's transcript. It ran to 89 pages, about average. Some shows filled more than 100.
Commandante by Rory Carroll was abridged by Pete Nichols and read by Jack Claff. The producer was Karen Rose, and it's a Sweet Talk production for BBC Radio 4. In Woman's Hour after the news, the Foreign Secretary William Hague will be telling Jenny Murray why he'll be discussing sexual violence at a G8 meeting next month. That's in a couple of minutes.
Over on BBC Radio 6 Music.
I knew I wanted to write words down. A singer, really, was the last thing I wanted to be.
This Easter, join us as we celebrate the return of David Bowie.
There's no comparison between David Bowie on stage and David Bowie off. They're hopelessly different.
Throughout this week, we explore the life and music of a creative icon, with interviews, documentaries and live sessions from the BBC archives. And then on Sunday at midday...
Berlin, from Bowie's Heroes. It's a place where great music has flourished out of a backdrop of political upheaval. I'm Danny Robbins, and this is Bowie and Beyond, a music fan's guide to Berlin.
Catch up on any of our special Bowie programmes right now at the 6 Music website.